Hello to all my ghoulies and goblins out there. This week, I have two spooky tales to share, and both come from my guest, Tangerine Bolin. She's a fierce social justice warrior and has founded her own organization, Revolution Truth. She's the executive director there and is a very fierce and proud human rights activist. When I reached out online and asked anyone if they had tales of terror to share, Tangerine messaged back immediately. And I think that both of Tangerine's tales will get you in the Halloween mood. Remember, dear listeners, reviews and ratings are where it's at. So if you're enjoying my October Spookathon, please hit the 5-star button wherever you listen to your podcasts. All right, and that's it. And now it's time for the second in our series of October Tales of Terror. Be sure to leave the lights on. Make sure all your doors and windows are locked. Sit back and enjoy. If you were to go to a conference or a party and you have to introduce yourself to a group of people, who are you as a human being?
Oh, my word. Okay. I'd say I'm a revolutionary at heart, but an idealist in a way, because I would aim for intelligent revolution, which is actual transformation, not just violent revolution, power replacing power, you know? That's probably the deepest driving force of my life, is that and being a person who understand different kinds of suffering, not all kinds for sure, but enough that I call it universal suffering, this entering a place where it's really tough to get out of. And I've always been driven to try to lessen suffering. But after I lost my health catastrophically 11 years ago, that was so, so deepened for me. And so I would say I'm a person who is very committed to doing whatever I can, even in tiny drops, to lessen suffering in this world. And I'm also flawed and fallible. So I have no illusions about that. We are all flawed and fallible, but those are my two driving forces. And that's how I present myself.
Do you think that that was something that, did you learn that as a child? Is it innate in you? Like, how did it happen?
Oh, my. Well, okay. My also very flawed parents, for all their issues and problems, imbued a couple of wonderful things into me, and that was a love of nature and animals. And my mom is very kind. She used to be known in her community as Saint Jan. She's not a saint, but she seems like one, and she's not fake. She really does seem like one. She's just kind. And for example, my best friend in the world is my childhood best friend slash sister, whom my parents helped raise. And so we had our problems, and they were not insignificant, but my best friend Susie's home life was harder, and she was my sister. And so I think my parents imbued into me this a deep love that transcended blood bonds. And I mean, Susie's like my soul sister. So yeah, I get emotional talking about her. Yeah, they, despite all our issues, they gave me some really good things. Yeah.
That's wonderful. I know. I mean, we are all flawed and fallible, of course. And, you know, we all have parents. And, you know, whether they're, you know, adoptive parents or biological parents, and, you know, these people influence us and shape us and mold us for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
You know, in good ways and maybe not so good ways.
Yeah.
In ways that we might need therapy for years.
Yeah.
In ways that we need to unpack things. But yeah. Yes, parents can be such incredible positive role models. And it really sounds like, I mean, I love St. Jan, right? I think that's kind of amazing. But to take in one of your friends who is struggling is just kind of remarkable.
Yeah. And we went separate ways for a long time. We were very different. I was like this lefty activist and she became sort of a born again Christian. I wasn't able to have kids and she had six kids. Yeah. Two of whom are redheads, which is amazing because she and her husband are brunettes. And, but we reconnected and it's the most beautiful thing. Like I would identify her absolutely as family. So my mom and dad, both, I have to credit them for giving me that. Though I will, if we have time, I'll add one little snippet. Okay. So you asked like, where'd you get that? How did you know? One of the things I wanted to be when I was really little, was a heart surgeon. And actually it's just a perfect metaphor because sadly my dad broke my heart when I was really little and he continued to break my heart. Because my dad deals with something very, very heavy and serious and that's never ending. And, it was so challenging growing up with him, that I had this fantasy of becoming a heart surgeon and how perfect is that? I wanted to fix hearts. So both, you could see both the embodiment of the good and driven from the hurt too. And those things are kind of deeply intertwined, I think, and remain part of my driving ethos or force. So.
Well, what I think is really interesting about that is, I mean, just a little story. It happened today. And I think it's really apropos for you as well, right? Because you and I are similar in a lot of ways. This has happened twice for me. I've worked at the same company off and on for 8 years. I'm older than everyone by like 20 or 30 years. So I'm kind of like everyone's mom here.
Yeah.
And with both the owner who a few months ago, who's having like a really bad day and was super agitated and was really upset and struggling. Now I've known him a long time. We're more like brother and sister. So, but even today with one of the, I came in and this guy who's so nice and so wonderful, and he felt so bad about it because he just launched right into how he'd quote unquote yelled at a customer and taken him. And he was so upset that he had this interaction. But then I got the longer story about how that he gave the guy his corrected coffee, followed him outside and they both apologized to each other, but he was still carrying the distress from just even having the interaction, but also, you know, and so I, you know, went up to both my boss a few months ago and to this coworker. And I asked the coworker today, can I touch you? I get permission. And I was like, I did this to my boss a few weeks ago. I mean, a few months ago, let me do this to you. It'll make you feel better. And I put my hand on his heart and I just rubbed in circles.
Aww.
And he was like, oh my God, you know, after like a minute, he's like, oh my God, I feel better. And I said, yeah, it feels good, right? It's taken you down a notch or two. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, okay, let me tell you more in depth. So then we had a longer conversation about what that interaction was with the disgruntled customer and stuff and had a more positive, he felt better afterwards. But I think, you know, I'm like physically touching them, but I think there's also the possibility, right? If you want to heal hearts, to do it through words or actions or whatever. And even though you're not a heart surgeon, you know, you didn't go to medical school, you every day, I've seen you online, like heal hearts for everyone through your words. So you're already doing it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You were saying that and I'm like, what? She's already doing it. What? So, but all of us have that capacity every day to like affect people positively and soothe them, you know, like soothe them. That's what I was doing. So
it's beautiful. They're lucky to have you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes. It's always important to ask permission before you touch someone.
Yes. Now, yes.
I didn't do that with my boss because we've known each other forever and we've been through so much and he doesn't, you know, he wouldn't take it the wrong way.
Yeah. Brother but with and sister.
Totally. Yeah. Well, did you grow up in a religious household or what did that look like?
No, I didn't. My parents were both recovering Catholics. And my dad was hardcore recovering Catholic because he was in school and he was like a James Dean character. He was the bad boy, the handsome bad boy. And he so he was always getting in trouble, including like physically abused by nuns. So so they have a lot of my dad has a lot of antipathy for the Catholic Church. My mom is more forgiving. She was always a good girl. You know, she actually went to Catholic high school in Los Angeles. So I grew up in a secular household. When I was really little, because of the influence of my grandma, I used to think there was a big angry Catholic God. And in adolescence, I was like, that's bullshit. That is some nonsense. So I got over that and, you know, just developed spiritually from then on. So
it's interesting because, you know, I have these conversations quite often. I mean, a lot of the guests on my podcast are people who started off as one religion and then over the years have kind of like deconstructed things and changed things and their worldview has shifted a bit. Even my cohort going through seminary, multiple of them were hardcore Christians, but then you go through seminary and it breaks you open in all sorts of ways that are unexpected. And it can be very painful, painful. But I kind of applaud your audaciousness for being a teenager.
Thanks.
Yeah. And realizing that.
Yeah. I'm glad too. I was still painfully shy back then, but which is hard to imagine now. But I'm really glad that I was able to start questioning at such a young age, and probably due to my reading. I mean, I was reading Plato at 11 years old, so I was like, oh, the flickering shadows on the wall. This is challenging my notions, and so started, you know, young.
I love that Plato. The Santa Fe Institute, they're having 3 nights of lectures or debate on the limits of immortality. And, you know, it was interesting there. So there are all these scientists in here last night, which is like, I am, a science person. So I was like excited to be a fly on the wall. And, you know, while they were debating all these different things and what is immortal, what does it mean to be immortal? Like, whatever, I just thought of the shadows in Plato's cave, that idea that reality isn't the shadows that we see, but outside, I think is an eternal one and has its own life. Yes. Like it will always exist. And so in that way, but would it exist without us observing it? Who knows? Are particles conscious?
I think so. I mean, I don't want to go on a tangent, but can I say something to that from my, okay. So as you probably know, I've been sick for a long time with severe chronic pain. And I started this medical ketamine series, and I did 11 in clinic sessions supervised by a doctor and a nurse. And each time, not to go into the whole nitty gritty of it, but it's profound. It's the first thing in 11 years that has even remotely helped me besides 2 anti-seizure drugs. And I've held on for dear life all this time. And again, I won't go into it, but it's quite a severe condition affecting both brain and central nervous system. And medical ketamine, the long and short of it for me is every time I'm under, I am quite sure that I've died and that I'm just a brain or a spirit, alternately, that's a brain that's still firing after death, and that I'm a spirit. And in each instance, just like with my non-drugged spiritual or existential experiences, I have touched what I would call the divine or the everything. And for me, it's non-religious, it's non-anthropomorphic, though we play a part in that, we do, but it's so much greater than us. And like Einstein once said, the universe is so far beyond our comprehension. It would just floor us. We can't even begin to understand it. And I feel like I touch that when I go in there, and it's quite indescribable and incredible. And I have no way to verify that this is anything empirically based. However, it's been my experience each time, and it reflects my past experiences that were just on their own. And I don't know, I just feel like we are a part of something that is absolutely indescribable, absolutely utterly beautiful, but not confined by human restrictions and limitations. And to that end, probably well beyond our current comprehension. That's my sense of it.
True story.
And even if we're wrong, and even if everyone in religion who follows a religion is wrong, why not do good? Why not? I mean, like Arnold Schwarzenegger said about climate change, even if everyone was wrong, why not change exhaust systems? Why not heat up the planet? You know, like, why not do better with our technology? So same thing, like you don't need a God to do good. You just need your own internal moral compass.
So you and I started having this conversation because I put a call out online for ghost stories, and immediately, and I have to let you know, you have been a unicorn for me. I have wanted to have you on the podcast for so long, and now finally it's happening. So I'm so excited, and that you're going to tell a ghost story is beyond thrilling for me. So I would love to hear whatever story you'd like to share.
Okay.
Around this. I'm so excited.
But just one story, right? Because I have two.
No, you can tell two. Tell two.
Really?
Yeah.
Because one is like a really cool, funny, passive version, and one is just a really interesting, strange thing.
I want both.
Okay. A long time ago, when I was an undergrad at Sonoma State University, I helped run a place called the Inn of the Beginning. It was a wonderful bar / like beer hall / pool hall / used bookstore and coffee house. It was quite the amalgamation of things, run by a wonderful Englishman and his wife. And I worked there to put myself through college. I worked with a lot of younger people, and one guy named Mike, and Stuart, the owner, used to always tell us, this place is haunted. This place is haunted. And oh, by the way, it was opened in the 60s by a co-op of students from our school, and they had Jerry Garcia, Neil Young, all these, Bob Dylan, all these greats played there. They had photos of them on the walls playing there. Yeah. So it was such an honor and pleasure to work there. But, you know, we were washing dishes and slinging beers, and Stuart used to tell us it was haunted. And I was fine, open with that. But I was there one winter late, you know, I was usually there till 2 a.m. at least. I was running into the back with a tray of dishes, and I saw a man in the corner. And it was weird because he looked really out of place. He was wearing Victorian era clothing with a long top coat and a top hat and a cravat. And I almost stumbled because I was like, what? And I felt him too. It felt like there was a person in the back in the kitchen, and the corner was kind of shadowy and dark. And I got to the metal sink washing table, and I put my bussing tray down, and I looked, and there was no one there, of course. And I thought that's weird. So I instantly doubted myself. And this sighting of this figure happened for me 2 or 3 times. And I didn't say anything to anyone because I thought, I'm being weird. I'm imagining things. And then Mike and I one day started talking about our experiences. And he's like, wait, have you seen the man? And I was like, the man? And he said, we were both like, describe him at the same time. And so he said, top hat, long coat. And so we described the same exact figure. My second story is more interesting, and I think maybe makes me a little more vulnerable because I sound a little crazy in it, but that's okay. So I had spent half a year living in South Korea after college teaching English. Had a pretty rough experience. And I'd come home, I left the United States after my parents lost everything and lost my childhood home. We're almost homeless. It was a really traumatic and scary time. And I felt very vulnerable. And I literally had nowhere to go home to when I came back from Korea. But my ex-boyfriend's mom and I had always been really close. And she said, I have a house in Laguna Beach. I'm just renting it at low cost to a couple, but they could use a roommate. You want to be the roommate. Let me back up. They're not coming for another few weeks. So I was there early, alone. So I got there and I picked up my cat who'd been staying with relatives, my wonderful black cat. And I was alone in this two-story house perched on a hill way above the ocean. Nothing fancy, but a sweet place, obviously a good place to have a house. And I was sad every day. I was really struggling. I worked at a museum. I bus tables on the side. I had a hard time and I was scared. And I was sitting on the couch downstairs, and the couch faced a TV on a wall. And to the right of the TV was the wooden staircase that went up to a landing and then turned a corner where you couldn't see the second level of the staircase to the upstairs. And my cat Jonah was right next to me. And all of a sudden we heard someone walking around upstairs. And it sounded like, I had come home from work, I plopped on the couch and was home 10 minutes or so. It sounded like a man walking around in boots. And I was like, oh my God. And my cat got up on all four paws with his back perfectly arched like a spooky Halloween cat and all his hair standing straight up. And he started growling. And he was like, I can't even do it. It was just this low cat growl. And we could hear the boots coming down the first part of the stairs. We couldn't see. And then get to the landing. I could hear it. And I'm sitting there facing this, but I couldn't see it. And then, they came all the way down the rest of the way. And I was like, there's someone standing in front of me and I can't see them. And my cat was like totally on edge, hissing at this point. So I was like, what the hell? I don't know what I did, but maybe I went into the kitchen. I was like fluttering around like, what just happened? So I had to live with that for a few days. I was kind of afraid to come home. But a few nights later, I came home and I was like trying to be all calm and everything. And I was in this lovely bedroom with my ex-boyfriend's mom's beautiful wooden sleigh bed. I had such a nice little setup. And Jonah and I had just gone to bed. And I was about to turn off the light. And all of a sudden, we heard someone walking around downstairs. And once again, I'm laying on the bed. Jonah's on my left, and he was a really big black kitty. He was so beautiful. And the door was on my right, sort of down, at the end of my feet on my right. And Jonah was like, stood up, ears alert, and then more walking around, and then the boots started coming up the stairs. And he did the same thing. He got up, he arched his back, but he had his front paws on me, on my legs, like he was almost guarding me. And the boots get to the landing and then creak, 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 not fast, not slow, just normal heavy boot walking. And they walk right up to the door. And Jonah's growling and hissing again. And I'm like, there's a rapist in the house. Even though what just happened, I thought there has to be someone. It was so clear cut. And I don't know what I was thinking. I was like a size zero or size two. And I jumped out of bed and I flung the door open with nothing in my hands. There was nothing there. So with those two events, I was like, all right, I've got a few weeks left before Mark and Kathy come to stay here. And I got to work this out because this is so not good. And I was thinking about it all day at work one day, and I came home from my job and I walked in the door and I suddenly realized I felt there might be two presences there. I have no idea why. I just felt like, I don't know. I just sensed that there was definitely one, if not two. But I walked in, I put my stuff down, and I started talking to the air. And I said, look, clearly you're trying to get my attention. And you live here. And I'm living here too, temporarily. And it's just temporary. And I know this is your space. But I can't see you. And if you're talking, I can't hear you. I can hear you walking and you're scaring the hell out of me. And I just got home from Korea and I have nowhere to go. And I'm freaking out and I'm trying to, you know, hedge off severe depression. And I'm just kind of a mess. I'm a mess. And I'm really, really sorry that I don't understand what you want from me. And if I can, I will continue to try to understand. And if you have any way of telling me what you want, then please tell me. But please stop scaring me, because you're scaring me. And I never heard anything again. I felt like something was there, but it felt gentler. It was never malicious, but it felt like there was frustration, like they needed to get my attention and I was not listening, or I was clueless. And I just very sincerely apologize for being a clueless human being in a temporal body that could not see or hear them, except for the boots. So that's my ghost story.
So I have to tell you that I got goosebumps and was terrified while you were telling that story. It's interesting. I bought a house in Portland decades ago now that was built in like 1914, 1915. And over the years of owning it, 23 years, people would come in and they're like, oh my God, this place is haunted. And I was like, okay, I'm not making things up, because the first week that I bought it and I moved in, you know, I'm boxes, I'm unpacking, I'm doing all this stuff. And there was a second floor and it was like an attic that had been converted. And the stairwell went right up and you could see. And I was just walking around and all of a sudden this knocking started on the second floor. And it was so regular. And it was like knock, knock. And it didn't end. It just went on and went on and went on. And I was like, I can't have this. I can't have this. So I went to the base of the stairs and I said, all right, you know what? I don't want to hear this. And you're not welcome here. And you need to go. Like wherever you're going, you need to go. Yeah. And it never happened again. Cause I mean, I was like, I don't have time for this. I'm living here. I'm like tired. And obviously you want something, but I can't give it to you. But yeah, you're so much more loving. You're like,
I felt after my initial terror that someone was in the house that was going to hurt me, a human being, which is a legitimate terror, you know, especially for us women. After I realized it wasn't that, I just had this sense that it wasn't malicious. I would not have been nice if it was malicious. I would have like sought help or something, but that it was, that I just sensed like a palpable frustration and sorrow. And so when I shared my own sorrow and my own vulnerability, and I shared that I felt dumb, that I couldn't understand what they were trying to communicate. And I legitimately felt that way. I was like, I hate this. I hate that I can't, you know, this separation, the veils, and there's a reason for the veils, and there's probably a really good reason, but I wished I could pierce through the veils and understand. And so, yeah, we lived copacetically after that for as long as I was at that house.
right. Was that scary or not? I think it's an incredible, incredible second episode in our October Spookathon. And I dearly hope, sweet listeners, that it's gotten you into a spooky mood. I think you'll notice by now that there are no bites in our October Spookathon, and the bites will be returning after our ghostly series is done. So rest assured, for those of you who like the short form of the podcast, it will be returning in November. We will be having some ghostly bites, though, because I am interviewing people I've had on the podcast before, and so every once in a while, there'll be a little midweek ghostly bite for you to sink your teeth into. Thanks to Tangerine for sharing her tales of terror, and thanks to her for being so brave and vulnerable for having a conversation with a mysterious spirit and then having that spirit listen and leave her alone. I don't think many of us can say that we've been taken seriously by someone on the other side, but it seems that Tangerine hit a nerve, and for that, I'm so very grateful. If I was alone in a spooky house and heard footsteps every once in a while and no one was there, I think I'd hightail it to the nearest motel. So kudos to Tangerine for her bravery and for sticking it out. I need to thank the creators of the music used in this episode: Alexander Nakarada, Justin Allen Arnold, Tim Kulig, Taiga Sound Productions, and Thor Owak. For complete attribution, please see the Bite-Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find all sorts of groovy things: books, artists, playlists, all sorts of fun things that I hope lighten and brighten your day. But now is not the season for things that lighten and brighten. Now is the season for spookiness, ghosts, and things that go bump in the night. So thank you for listening, and here's my one request. I hope that you, when you experience something that comes from the other side of that veil, I hope that you find the bravery, the fortitude, and the vulnerability to confess all to that spooky presence, and then tell it to leave you alone.
But yeah, we don't know. I mean, we all have our ideas, and a lot of scientists are ready to poo-poo the idea, or like near-death experiences, ready to just explain those away as a biochemical process of the brain. And I just don't know, because I've been so close to death a couple times in my own illness that they were transcendent. I mean, these moments, these symptoms were so severe. They felt like they were truly transcendent and put me into another realm of existence. And I was able to tap into something that I can't explain well in human terms. And again, maybe I just imagined all that in my beleaguered brain, but I've had other signs of validation of that kind of imagining of what could be, you know, outside of me. So, you know, I just think it's hubris to think we know, and it's foolish to close off ourselves in any way.